This is Great FM.
Prevention of Sexual Harassment is better known by the acronym POSH, P-O-S-H. And while many of us have heard of this combination of letters, it's safe to say that not many of us actually know the extent of the act or its relevance within the workplace. Hi, folks. Welcome to Great FM, Great HR's official podcast series. I'm Mahalia, and today we're going to be diving into a very crucial function of HR, which is creating a safe workplace. You know, in the hierarchy of needs, I think that comes probably first. A survey conducted by Network of Women in Media, India, NWMI, and Gender at Work, as recently as 2020, in fact, suggests that 70% of respondents who had approached an internal committee to report sexual harassment at the workplace were not actually completely satisfied with the outcome, while 36% of all the respondents reported having experienced sexual harassment at the workplaces. And out of those 36%, 53% did not even report it to anyone. So it's not really debatable at this point that POSH should be implemented, leveraging the full gamut of protection, addressal, and support that it can potentially offer. And yes, it's very much an issue for HR professionals worldwide. So to understand how the two converse, HR and creating a safe workplace using POSH, please welcome to the podcast today, Chrislyn DeCosta, co-founder of Serene Inc., an organization that has worked with over 300 companies to implement all things safety, inclusion, and culture at the workplace. Some of their initiatives include unconscious bias training, inclusive leadership training, and of course, an end-to-end sexual harassment compliance. Welcome, Chrislyn. How are you?
I'm good, Alia. Thank you for having me.
And I think you're probably the perfect person for us to get into this conversation with, because it is a very uncomfortable one, I have to say, even now, given the decades of progress that we have made, it still ends up, you know, being one of those things that people get quite awkward about. So I think I'd like to start at the beginning. Why should the implementation of POSH and the correct implementation and also awareness around this be a priority for HR in the country?
Yes, sure. So, Alia, I'm sure many of your listeners have been on LinkedIn and have heard a lot of these conversations about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. So increasingly, HR and leaders are sort of recognizing how important it is to attract good talent, and at the same time, looking at what is the impact of this good talent and working on DEI on business outcomes. Now, implementation of POSH is actually the most basic form of inclusion. It's a great way to start that inclusion journey in your company. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we are all aware that safety is a basic human need that we all have. Mm-hmm. And a lot of research shows that if an employee feels safe, there are multiple benefits to it. You have better retention as an organization, employees perform better, and more importantly, it is their positive testimony that allows you to then attract more good talent into your organization. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the most primary reasons why the right implementation of POSH is so important.
It's also a great motivator, because if inclusivity is such a priority for companies world over, then surely creating that safe workplace and enabling that inclusivity is just a follow-up, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, I was actually in conversation with someone talking to them about POSH. They are also POSH experts. And it was very surprising to me the different kinds of problems that POSH actually addresses and the depth into which the act actually goes. What are the five basics about POSH that you'd like to present to our listeners today so that they're maybe more aware of the kind of protection that this offers?
So, interestingly, the law is very clear of to which companies POSH applies. And POSH applies to any company with more than 10 employees. This means that you can have 10 male employees and you still have to implement the act. It extends to the associates, the interns, your clients. It protects everyone associated with the organization.
Right.
So there are five things essentially that a company needs to put in place the moment it crosses 10 employees. One is to have a company posh policy stating your stance against sexual harassment in the workplace. The second is setting up what we call an internal committee. So India is the only country that has this unique system of the internal committee to fast track cases of sexual harassment at the workplace.
Right.
The other is the training. So trainings are extremely important, and I will be, sharing with you a little more later. But essentially, the trainings for your IC members is crucial, because when a case comes to them, it is time bound. Now, this internal committee has to know and be trained on how to be unbiased. They have to know the procedures and the legal act itself. So the training of the internal committee has to be done once every year according to the law. So that's the third. And the fourth
Right.
is the training of your employees. A lot of times people assume that, okay, we've done the training last year. Is it really necessary the following year? Absolutely. It reminds your employees of your stance as an organization against sexual harassment. It reminds them that there are internal redressal procedures. So these are the four most important ones. And the fifth one, of course, is filing your annual report in December. So this annual report suggests that you are compliant with the law. It has no confidential information. It just states that you have a committee, you have done so many trainings, and these are the number of cases that may be filed during the year. So you don't have to mention the details of the case. You're simply mentioning the number of cases that have been filed, and this goes to the Deputy Commissioner every December.
And I think what I want to ask you now, like I said in the beginning, this conversation always gets a bit uncomfortable when you're talking at an organization level, right? What do you think? And I think that's where HR sort of steps in, which is how do you think HR can make this conversation more accessible and also less intimidating for everybody involved? Because it is really important for every single person to be involved.
Yes, that's such a wonderful question because I think that's something a lot of companies struggling with. How to make it accessible, how to make it less intimidating, especially when a company grows, and you move across locations, you may have factory setups, and you want everyone to have sort of that equal access to this posh committee. There are a couple of things that I've seen work really well. One is to sort of set up. Now, the law clearly states that have senior people on the posh committee. So, as an HR, when you are appointing the posh committee, yes, your presiding officer should be the senior most woman in the organization. But you do have that space to appoint people across the organization as the additional internal members. So it helps to have members across the organization from different departments. So they are familiar with the company, the business, as well as people are familiar with those faces, right? So that builds some sense of familiarity when somebody's, like you said, choosing to file a complaint, but it's a very uncomfortable conversation. But if I see a familiar face, I'm likely to reach out for help. So when that conversation is normalized, when increasingly leaders talk about, okay, these are behaviors that are acceptable, these are those who are not acceptable, and it's okay to reach out for help, that is what makes people more comfortable with saying, this happened to me and I would like to report it. The last thing that I would sort of recommend, and I think what works really well, is especially HR that has trained their managers and trained their IC members on their first response when a complaint is filed, right? The law says a complaint has to come in writing, but most times people will verbally come and tell their manager, they will tell the HR, or they will tell the IC. Now, if your response to somebody's complaint is going to be that of disbelief, or one where you're trivializing, saying, hey, you know what, don't take it so seriously, it's just a joke, or don't worry, this will pass, and if you make a big deal out of it, everyone else is going to be uncomfortable on the team. If those are going to be our responses, then over time, employees are likely to feel that, like you said, this is not an accessible committee. I would rather keep it to myself, or I'd rather leave the organization. So, one is to definitely train your managers and your IC members on first response when a complainant comes forward with their complaint.
Absolutely. That's a very important aspect of all of it, actually. And I think also, like you mentioned, there's quite a bit of fear involved, especially for complainants, when they are considering doing something like this. And historically, I think fear has always been combated, with fact. The more that people understand something, the less afraid they have to be. And that leads me to my next question, which is, do you think that spreading awareness about Porsche is one HR's responsibility? And if so, what are the different ways of actually going about that?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's a very important responsibility that HR has. When you talk about Porsche awareness, what do you mean by the awareness, right? You are doing a training to one, tell a complainant what are their rights in the organization, the right to a safe workplace, the right to speak up, and you're telling a lot of your other employees what is appropriate behavior. So what will be acceptable and what would be penalized? So for example, if you are somebody that cracks a lot of sexual jokes or uses a lot of offensive language back home with your close friends, maybe you might do that in personal space, but you cannot do that in our workplace. We do not value such behavior. So when you have these trainings, that's what you're establishing, that this is the kind of behavior that we value as an organization. I think the last thing in terms of awareness, what we talk about is once you've done the training, definitely keep the conversation going. So you can definitely send regular mailers. I know some companies that by default, they change the screensaver of all employees to sort of talk about what is posh, what is respectful behavior, things like that. So keep the conversation going at regular intervals. So it doesn't just seem like a checkbox. It seems like, okay, this is what our leadership believes in, and I'm expected to sort of conform to respectful and appropriate behavior in the workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we're on the topic of keeping the conversation going, you can always circulate this podcast with everybody around and get a better idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, technically
Yes.
this is literally a conversation, so that is absolutely on point.
This is Great FM.
You did mention, the role of leadership, Chrislyn, in creating a safe work environment. I think it's an invaluable one, really, and it is part of the responsibility that any leader has to, embrace in at least in today's day and age. How do you think HR can facilitate that change where they sort of enable leaders to create that work environment?
There are actually quite a few things. One of the things we talk about is take the basics and sort of build on that. One of the simple things is the Porsche policy. I know it is a law, but if your Porsche policy has a lot of legal jargon, it is not accessible. So one of the best practices that research shows is especially in, say, a maternity policy or a policy like this, prevention of sexual harassment, simplify the language and make it accessible to all employees. The second is with regards to, like I said, a lot of companies today have expanded across regional locations. Especially if you are a company that, say, has a lot of, say, factories or warehouses, for example, have multiple spots. By law, every regional location should have a separate internal committee set up. But in the event that you haven't set up one, you should appoint a SPOC because that facilitates that, okay, people know that, okay, this is the person I speak to if I face sexual harassment, and they will escalate my complaint to the internal committee in, say, the head office or the nearest internal committee in the nearest city. But because there's so much of research to show, right, that very, very often in blue-collared work, women are extremely vulnerable and there's even more stigma attached to them speaking up. So having these SPOCs, I think, is very important for HR to sort of organize and facilitate the training and the appointment of these SPOCs. The other, I think, in terms of leadership is definitely as an HR to speak to leaders about the regular communication they are having about company values. So, for example, if you work in a company where leadership is, say, every all hands that you have or every team meeting that you do every quarter, if you have a leader that takes 5 minutes to talk about inclusivity, talk about respectful behavior, people know that the leadership values this. On the other hand, if you have a leadership that, say, trivializes or makes fun of posh, so somebody who says, oh, you know, so many posh cases are happening, don't try and file a, you know, false complaint. Mm-hmm. If these are some jokes that are cracked, people who sort of indulge in inappropriate behavior, other employees, they are going to get the message that it's okay if I mm-hmm. continue with this behavior. I will not be penalized. On the other hand, somebody who is even considering firing a complaint, hearing such subtle messages from a leader will make them reconsider whether they should actually file that complaint or not. So leadership communication or coaching of leaders and communication of posh is extremely critical, because that is what determines whether people actually access the redressal mechanism in your organization.
The communication of posh is such a valuable input, because I think it's something that everybody can sort of learn to do, and right now maybe doesn't know how to do. I think I'll shift gears a little bit now, Chrislyn, because I want to talk about, you know, the actual happenings of a posh case, right? And one of the unfortunate things that happens sometimes is a case actually becomes public. Even if not officially, it does get made public, you know, just through word of mouth and things like that. What are the implications in your experience of that kind of environment?
When a case becomes public, I think often HR and leaders often sort of imagine you're thinking about the image of the company. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about how it's going to impact how clients, customers, or users are going to look at you as a company and your products or services. But I think additionally, what's very important to consider is the loss of talent that you might incur. Even though a case might happen between two parties, when it becomes public, it impacts the entire organization. And that does lead to a loss in morale. And that, like I said, leads to a loss of a lot of good talent. And today you have so many platforms, right? Like Glassdoor, that are talking about employee experience. Mm-hmm. And when a potential candidate is deciding to work with an organization today, candidates are actively looking at company culture. And they are going to consider, is this a safe place for me to choose to work?
And, you know, speaking of a very important player in this entire ecosystem is obviously the internal committee, the IC. And HR of any organization actually plays a very active role in putting that IC together, right? Am I correct in assuming that?
Absolutely.
Right. So then in that case, it's almost as if selecting a jury of sorts, right? So what are the key factors that an HR professional should keep in mind when putting together this IC?
Sure. So this is a very sensitive conversation. I think one of the things is to have a set of people that you trust as an organization, because this is a very confidential process. The law values confidentiality, and not just of the details of the complaint, but also the identities of everybody involved. Mm-hmm. So it's important to have a set of people that you trust with confidential information. People who are mature enough to come up with an unbiased and a fair inquiry and conclusion. Lately, I think one of the things that companies are seeing merit in, because this is something we've increasingly been pushing for as externals, that so the law itself protects women from sexual harassment at the workplace. And if you choose to write, say, a gender-neutral company policy, then it's important that you have IC members that have a strong understanding of gender itself, mm-hmm. Not just gender in the binary, but also extending to the LGBTQ community. So I think once you're selecting a committee, look for all of these aspects. People you trust, people who are mature, people who have a strong understanding about gender, and lastly, people who other employees are comfortable with. You are able to see from people's demeanor, from the way they socialize, who are people easily able to open up to and speak to without any fear of judgment or some kind of character assessment. So I think these are the four main qualities of a good IC member. The law itself, of course, specifies the gender composition, the seniority, things like that. But I think additionally, these are four important aspects.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Very insightful. And I also did want to do a lead off from this one. What do you think is the role of the IC in proactively building a safe workplace for employees during the happenings of a case, during the proceedings of a case? It can be a very sort of vulnerable time for the organization as a whole, right?
Yes, I think two things are extremely important. One is to follow procedure. A lot of thought has gone into the writing of this particular act. Mm-hmm. So following the timelines, following the required steps that the law has specified will allow you to ensure that all parties feel safe. The second thing that I would recommend is constant communication.
And, you know, Krislyn, speaking of the IC, it's also a big responsibility of theirs to sort of keep things in check around the organization during a case, because I'm sure it can be quite a volatile and vulnerable time for everybody, not just the, you know, the people within the case, right? So what is their role in building a safe workplace for employees during the proceedings of a case?
Yes, so there are two things that I think are extremely important for the IC to follow. One is definitely to follow the timeline and the process. So the law, a lot of thought has gone into the writing of the act. So mm-hmm. the process is ensure that all the parties are safe, they ensure confidentiality. So the first thing I would say is to sort of be well trained on the act and to follow the basic timeline and the procedures. The second, I think, important part of the IC's role during a case is communication. Right. So, for example, ICs do have a lot on their plate. And it's important, though, that even if certain phases of the inquiry take some time, to constantly communicate that to the complainant and the respondent, because it is a very stressful or emotional experience for both of them. So it's important to communicate to them that, hey, you know, it's taking us some time. We will be getting back to you on so-and-so date, or we are working on so-and-so facts. We will have a conclusion on so-and-so date. So any stage that takes a little more time than usual, it's important to communicate that to the two parties so that they are at ease and they know that the IC is still, you know, looking into the case itself. So I think these are crucial during a inquiry process.
Okay, cool. Fantastic. And I think now I want to jump to after the case, right? Once things have been resolved and the case has come to a conclusion, how can HR professionals protect complainants and also create a safe environment for them after everything, you know, after the dust has settled? Because like you said, it's not just about the happening. It's also about what happens after that.
Yes, yes. There are a couple of things that can be done for the complainant. One is to protect them from any kind of retaliation. Now, when we think of retaliation, people think of the extreme that because somebody filed a complaint, they have lost their job or they have lost a promotion. But retaliation can also be in sometimes subtle ways of the complainant being ostracized by the rest of the team if the team members have found out, or the complainant being treated differently by their manager or, you know, other colleagues. So mm-hmm. these are subtle forms of retaliation. It's important, one, to ensure that there is no retaliation towards the complainant or the witnesses who have chosen to speak up. And if as an HR or an IC member, you observe any form of retaliation, it's important to take action. Even before that, when you are writing down the conclusions of the case, whatever action you are taking, it's important to sort of ensure that there is no scope for retaliation. Mm. So I think that's one. The second is sometimes you have more severe cases that might require you to connect the complainant to a counselor or a psychiatrist. It might be cases where there is a chance of physical harm to the complainant or the witnesses outside the workplace. So as an HR, you might need leadership assistance to file a police complaint in certain more serious cases. Mm-hmm. And sort of help them either by providing legal assistance or by being present when the person is choosing to file that police complaint along with the IC complaint. So I think these are some of the important things even after the case has been concluded by the committee.
Yeah, very, very practical insights there, Krislyn. And I think I want to end today's conversation maybe on quite a kicker, just because there might be a lot to talk about. But, you know, like you said in the beginning, the proper implementation of POSH is the direct result sometimes of an inclusive environment, but also can result in a very inclusive environment. Do you think that link is very evident and obvious, or do you think, you know, there are more nuances there?
I think that link is, I think, extremely obvious. I think for us, that is our approach at Serene. All the workshops that we do has been a way to start off with POSH, but largely address broader culture-related conversations. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned earlier, so you can be talking about POSH, but if you talk about the fact that you have a gender-neutral company policy, you're able to extend that conversation to the protection of employees who, say, identify as a different gender, or people who belong to other sexual orientations that are typically not spoken about in a workplace. So I think it's extremely important to sort of use this as a conversation starter to talk about things like LGBTQ inclusion, to talk about bullying based on weight, for example, or bullying based on people who are differently abled. So I think these are different ways to get started with saying that, yes, we talk about what is appropriate and inappropriate, and people automatically connect to these conversations. If your training is just a do's and don'ts of this is okay, that is not okay, it is not going to be effective. It has to be a broader conversation, acknowledging the diversity in the team, acknowledging the different backgrounds we come from, and how sometimes the definition of appropriate or the definition of consent might not be well understood by everybody or might be differently understood by each person. So how do you create a space that people are on the same page? People know what you mean by a safe culture or an inclusive culture. What are those behaviors you're looking for? And that sort of allows them to act upon that conversation. So I always keep saying that POSH is a great conversation starter if you want to begin your DEI journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is such a great call out to wrap this conversation on. There is a direct link between inclusivity and the proper implementation of POSH. It's a great start off point, like Ruslan has said today. And I just want to thank you for bringing such practical and insightful knowledge to the conversation today, Ruslan. It's really been very practical. More than anything, I think you've given us some really tangible tips to take with us. So thank you for that.
Most welcome. Thank you for having me, Alia. It's really nice to be here.
Great. Well, I end by saying great, but this has been another podcast on Great FM. We'll be back with many more, I'm sure, in the future. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, stay safe, stay curious, and of course, implement POSH if you can.
This is Great FM.